February 20th, 2008. And we'll open an informational meeting on education and workforce training. Committee members, I'll call your attention to the committee's report from the 2007 session, which Patrick's handed out to each of us this morning, meeting our challenges, workforce, and economic development. And was just reviewing some of the points that were made in this report here prior to our opening. And on page 4, it talks about a flexible and unified workforce system, and further discusses the need to integrate education, economic development, and workforce training towards the development of high-performance workplace models. Talks about how critical education is as a component. And reading a quote from Representative Huffman's predecessor, former Representative John Dolan, he said that the Workforce and Economic Development Committee should meet simultaneously with the Education Committee because their goals are the same. And I think we have a very apropos presentation this morning. With that, I'd like to call forward, please, James Sager and Jerry Berger. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thank you for turning out early this morning. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
Chair Witt, for the record, James Sager with the Governor's Office, and excuse my voice, I caught the crud in my chest.
Oh, boy.
I'll move over.
Yeah, I'll keep it going as long as I can. Please, the committee, what I'd like to do this morning is start off with the chair of the State Board of Education, Jerry Berger, talking about the documents that you have in front of you, which have to do with the essential skills and the new diploma requirement. And then I would like to highlight a few issues that from the last your last meeting, I kind of took note of some ideas you had. But then I think what might be most beneficial for all of the committee members is to, you know, we'd be happy to sit here and answer questions and really focus on what your concerns and issues might be, so that way we can take notes and also begin to answer some questions, hopefully. So with that, Mr. Berger.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jerry Berger. Today I'm here as chair of the State Board of Education. And I could talk a long time about the new diploma. What Mr. Sager and I have decided to do is give you overviews and then open it up for questions that you might have or whatever. But I'd like you to refer to this green sheet. I believe each of you have this. And on the page where it says Oregon Diploma, that side, I think it's important to look at the goal. Each student demonstrates the knowledge and skills necessary to transition successfully to their next steps, advanced learning, work, and citizenship. That's the goal we had in mind when the State Board looked at the graduation requirements. And on the next paragraph, the history, we started that in March 2006. We sent out a paper statewide which talked about the present diploma and where people wanted to go in the future. There were over 300 community meetings were conducted statewide. Over 5,000 surveys were received. And on January 18, 2008, the State Board of Education adopted the new graduation requirements. I'd like to highlight a couple of things that happened during that time. In our review, what we found, and what we found in Oregon under the old system, is if a student took and got the credits, they graduated. There were no requirements regarding minimum skills or minimum qualifications for that diploma. Some of you are very familiar with the term SIM and CAM, which started in about 1991. But the thing the state did when we adopted SIM and CAM, we never made any of those mandatory. They're always by choice, by some schools pushed it, some didn't. They were not part of the requirement to graduate from high school. A lot of people don't know that. I think that was a fundamental mistake in 1991 because we set some interesting, I think some standard students could have met, but we never required them. They were not required. The new diploma, Oregon Diploma Requirements, does have, in addition to more credits being required, it has essential skills that students must master, or they could have all the credits, but they would not graduate from, get a high school diploma. They must demonstrate that they not only did these things, but they can apply it. Highlight some of the changes. English language and arts went from 3 to 4 credits.
Representative Hoffman.
Question.
Thank you. Yeah, Jerry, how do they test out, or how do they prove they can apply it?
Well, if you looked, if you go to the essential skills, if you look at read and interpret a variety of text, the state does have a test for that. I think that will probably that will be used, but there will be a cutoff score as one of the ways to do that. Write for a variety of purposes. There is a writing standard in schools that I believe will be adopted. We're working on this right now, but there are standards right now in schools for writing. Speak and present. That's the speaking and oral was probably one of the best things that happened through SIM before a student could go all the way through 12 mm-hmm. years and never do a speech. Mm-hmm. That was implemented almost totally in the state, so there are standards for the oral presentation. Apply mathematics in a variety of settings. We do have some mathematical testing. We're looking at, we've raised the mathematics standard, so we are looking at what that new version would be. The other thing we're the other thing we're working with is the fact there will be some things the state will test or will measure, and then we will give some things to the district with some guidelines from the state that the district will measure. If you take a look at civic and community engagement, you really don't get at that by testing, I don't believe. Global literacy isn't quite by testing. You could do some. Career-related learning standards and testing. So there's a combination of, there will be a combination of testing will be one way to get that, and there will be a combination of performance and activities in the schools that can get at that. Yeah, please. If I don't see your hand, ask questions. To go back to what we added, and some of this done was by the legislature, too. This just wasn't the State Board of Ed. The English Language Arts was adopted by the legislature to add a credit. Mathematics, it was adopted by the legislature to add a credit. The board, the State Board of Education, took the mathematics requirement a little further. We defined it as by the year 2014, that to get a diploma, you must take Algebra 1 and above for 3 years to get your diploma. In the past, it was mathematics, whatever it could be. It could be sixth grade mathematics taught at ninth grade, and that would count. Now we're saying, and we put it out to 2014, because if you in our conversations with teachers around the state, parents around the state, individuals around the state, they were very concerned that we took time on the mathematics portion so students could get ready for that throughout the process. The other important thing, the other important concept that isn't captured on this, the State Board of Education has reviewed all of its standards for students K through 12. So you don't start work on the high school diploma in grade 9. You've got to start, ideally, K, 1, 2, 3, and move students through that process. True. We feel very comfortable. We've had some outside experts come and look at the state standards. We have them aligned, and we think that the schools will be then addressing students' needs when they start school And by the time they get to the 12th grade, it should be automatic. They've met standards, et cetera, et cetera. So that's very important. Science, we went from 2 units to 3, which basically brought us up to a total credit of 24 units. From 2008-2009, it goes from 22 credits required to 2010, to 24 credits. The reason we have that is the mathematics doesn't happen until 2014, and all the essential skills isn't until 2012. If you turn the page, we're trying not to do this work in isolation. It's very complicated work. Each school district's different. Each student is different. Your grandchildren, your children, they learn differently. Education's a very complicated, learning's a very complicated thing. So we have task forces working on the overall implementation of it. The advisory task force, I do serve on that. I think, Mr. Sager, you serve on that also. We have an essential skills task force. Representative Huffman is looking at how are we going to measure this, what do we do, meaning the state, and what do we expect and make sure the schools do regarding essential skills. Standards and assessment task force, we're about done with the standards portion of that, where we've reviewed our standards. Now we're looking at how do we tweak tests, what tests do we make sure we have, those types of things. One other comment. Your state board made a decision not to go with one entrance exam for graduation from high school. Some states have gone with an entrance exam. Exit exam. We decided not to, based on feedback we got from people, plus looking at what happened around the country with exit exams. Huge furor, fight about it. And exit exams, for the most part, are paper and pencil tests. You go A, B, C, D, boom, A, B, C, D, boom. And it doesn't really go to perhaps some higher level thinking skills. So we decided to go with the essential skills to put on top of the credits, or with the credits, not on top of the credits, with the credits, so that we are getting people to think, we're getting them to reason, and we're getting them to apply the knowledge they've learned. Another thing we put in there is credit for proficiency. Our students, example would be families transferred to France. They live in France. Students in France learns the language. In the old system, you'd go back and say, okay, you need to take so many years of foreign language. We say if a student can prove proficiency, they should be able to get credit. Mm-hmm. If you take a look at the what you have at your fingertips, and many families do this, you got at your fingertips the email, you've got courses online, you've got all kinds of things where you can learn beyond the classroom. That becomes very, very, very important. So we do have credit for proficiency. And then we have a task force looking at cost capacity. This would be especially true at students that are not on point to get their degree. What extra help do they need? What resources do we bring with them? That's kind of an overview of the new graduation requirement. Yes.
I had written down a question, and in the last bullet point there, kind of touched on it. Do we know what a if any budget impact might be, particularly for rural small schools and implementing the new standards?
Representative Huffman, we are looking at the we're trying to get an idea of what cost that may be. What we've tried to do, though, in this is we've tried to take, and some of you, I'll use this term, we've tried to take the best work that was done with SIM and CAM, because there was some really good work over those 15, 16 years, and incorporate that with the new graduation requirements. I gave you the example of the oral presentation. That's in the schools now. That will continue to be in the schools. So that will be nothing will be needed new to do that. Probably the most probably the two toughest, the new things that will cause the biggest problem will be the math, and that will be both of the content level and the instructors, because that becomes, can you get the instructors? And two would be science, because there's another unit, and that, again, also has the problem of student, not content as much. Science is learned many ways differently than math. Maybe we, some suggestions is you teach math as you do science labs, and you learn things, but I digress. But you're going to have to hire more science instructors to get the science. Those are the two most problematic things. We've had studies done with the Teacher Standards Practice Commission, what it looks like, and it varies of what that may be.
Thank you, Chair Witt. That's kind of what I was wondering. I could almost see a Condon High School where you've got maybe one teacher that's teaching math and science now, and there's more of a course load. I just wondered how that might impact. A follow-up, Mr.
Please.
Chair. And this is my perception, and I apologize if I'm mistaken and I step on anybody's toes. I always perceived that SIM and CAM was not necessarily integrated into, or maybe higher ed was not maybe brought into that process of SIM and CAM. And that's not really my point. And so if I'm wrong, I apologize. But based on that perception, was higher ed brought into the new standards, and were they sitting at the table and in agreement with these?
Chair Witt and Representative Huffman, yes. We have, in the last 4 years, I believe, Mr. Sager can give you more details. I've been the chair of, I always get the name, it's UEE, which is the Unified Education Enterprise, where board members and staff from the state system of higher education, board members and staff from the State Board of Education have met to address specific problems that we perceive of students moving from one sector to the other. And we have made some great strides on that. Example, almost all high schools give advanced placement tests. And when a student took their advanced placement, what it meant varied in the seven universities in the state. Believe it or not, we solved that problem. Now, a 3 and out in math is the same at Eastern Oregon as it is at University of Oregon. So we have been working on things such as that. Also, when we've had these hearings, we've talked about it. We have had higher ed individuals, faculty, whatever, involved in the process. The thing that people have to be reminded of, the high school diploma is for everyone. You could get a high school diploma, meet all these requirements, and you might not be ready to enter into the engineering program at University of Oregon, depending on what you took in high school. I think I don't see that as a failure. That's just a given. That's why we have in the diploma the plan and profile of the student. Where do you want to go? And I know we make changes, and I know parents, how can I make this? I'm going to ask my ninth grader where to go. We tell them where to go, but not educationally. Excuse me. But a student has to kind of have an idea where they want to go in order to know, are they taking what they need so they can get there? And that is part of this diploma, is that schools will be sitting down with individual children, students, parents, and they need to look at where do they want. If I want to go to Harvard, the curriculum I take in high school better be a lot different than if I want to go to, since I ran the place, Schumacher Community College. Standards are different. What you have to get is different. So we have worked closely with the state system higher ed.
I have Representative Riley next, and followed by Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in the proficiency tests or evaluation. How early does that start? And the reason I ask that question is I had a son who years ago was bored by the third grade and wanted to move on in areas. And I wanted to know how early those proficiencies can start.
the state, the Board of Education policy and procedures are, we give that authority to the local district. There is no reason why we should keep somebody here when they're operating here. Now, there's logistical problems, there's maturity problems, but our plan is if a student has the academic skill to keep and keep learning, we're urging those districts to use proficiencies, measure those proficiencies, and teach the student at the level they are, not what they should be.
And is that by, even in the lower grades, is that, will that be by subject matter? For instance, if someone is good in math but slower in a science or something, they can move at different speeds.
The design would be, it would be by area of expertise, which could be defined as subject matter.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Springer.
Thank you. I guess I'll preface my question with a comment. It's been my understanding over the years that Algebra 2 is an indicator of success based on research for post-secondary education. And I've noticed here, and you alluded, or you talked about it earlier, that one of the requirements is 3 years of Algebra 1 and above. So based on that comment, can you help me understand that a little bit? You started to go there just a couple comments ago about the diploma is for everybody, but help me understand, because I know Algebra 2 is key to success after high school.
Yeah, there's some national studies that show very clearly, here with Representative Springer, there's some national studies that clearly show that if you take Algebra 2 and are successful, you're going to be more successful in higher education. My answer to that is duh. Because if you go to Algebra 2, you're not necessarily the typical high school student. Because a lot of high school students don't go there. So you've taken Algebra 1, you've taken Geometry, you've taken Algebra 2, you might have taken Calculus. So those students are not necessarily the typical student in the high school. Those are advanced learning students. So one of the easy things, and when we had these debates of what we were going to add or not, one of the simple things is some states said everybody takes Algebra 2. I can show you states that say they take Algebra 2. Indiana had a college curriculum for every, but they let the person choose it, the parent choose it the first way. And they've been very successful with that. Now they've said everybody has to have it, and the initial results are they're not being quite as successful because you don't have the same motivation, the same push. So we decided not to adopt Algebra 2, and I was a great proponent not to adopt Algebra 2. The mathematics in the typical route is Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, and then pre-calculus, calculus. That would be called the college prep curriculum. We have students pursuing a lot of other avenues. And Algebra 2, what we've done here is, and we're defining this, you might take industrial mathematics. You might take mathematics for technicians. You might take statistics, which is something that is very, very important in today's world, which we would say is above Algebra 1. All we've done is, in this thing is, many students, if you plan to go to University of Oregon, you probably should go through Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, Calculus, or whatever. And if your plan and profile says you're going to an apprenticeship program, perhaps, there may be a mathematics class that might better fit their learning need and still teach mathematical concepts that help them understand what that theory is. Mathematics is very, the way we teach it in the college prep is very theoretical. And it's not, and a lot of students don't see where it fits in their lives. That's why we see classes on statistics, for example, ability to read charts, graphs, those types of things can be built into, motivate students to learn it, and they will learn mathematical concepts. That's the thought on that. But we had a lot of discussion. Should it be Algebra 2?
Okay, thank you.
I have Vice Chair Lim up next, followed by Representative Holby.
Thank you.
Mr. Sager, please talk if you want to.
You're the chair.
My question is that you already stated, Jerry, that we don't have enough math and science teachers. And that's one of the problem I heard in the past many sessions, and now still the same problem. So what programs, what incentives do you have in the future? Make sure we have enough science and math teachers available, such as the incentive, more pay for, so I'm not sure whether this is the right way to approach, but at least we need to have some kind of incentive for those teachers. Do you have any such plans?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, you will receive in the 09 session a series of proposals that we'll be bringing forward that we believe will both help address the pipeline creation of science and math teachers in cooperation with both the community colleges and the universities, as well as professional development concepts to help provide additional resources in the districts to help the current math and science teachers enhance their skill sets and knowledge. As Chair Berger mentioned, this whole concept of applied learning is really important inside this diploma. So it's not just a matter of having the technical background to teach Algebra 2 or pre-calc or trig, but how would you apply that? We have a program at Oregon City High School, for instance, where we're actually training young men and women to become line people in the utility industry. Now, when I went and spoke to those students here last year, they all said the thing that was most surprising to them was the amount of math and science that they had to learn. But because this was an interest of theirs, the instructor was able to pull them in. So they were learning math, the math standards above Algebra 1, but they were doing it in an applied manner that really made sense connected to their future. So it is helping our current staff enhance their credentials, and then also that pipeline issue. Along with that, and I'm going to jump a little bit to some of the comments, questions that you've asked before, we're also looking at the need for more career technical education instructors. Because, again, we have to have that applied program so that students can move along the path that they see their future. One of the points that the governor has made repeatedly is in talking to young men and women who have dropped out of school, 99% of the time it had nothing to do with their lack of intelligence. They were very smart, but they were bored. They didn't see the connection. Their vision of their future at that point in time wasn't, I'm going to exit high school and go to the University of Oregon and pursue. It was, I want to become an electrician. I want to build. I want to become a millwright. I mean, if you think of the level of science and math skill you need to become a millwright, and yet those jobs, we haven't been talking about those kinds of jobs for over a decade. But in fact, that's exactly what we need here in Oregon to support our manufacturing industries. Most of the millwrights in Oregon are at or near retirement, and we need a pipeline to restore that. So we are really asking the high schools, but the K-12 system, as well as the community college, to really expand these opportunities for students and show those connections.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sager and Mr. Berger, thank you very much for this presentation. And you interestingly enough, just commented on something I was going to comment about, and I'm really excited to hear you talking about things like millwrights. I've spent some time working with apprenticeship programs with millwrights, actually, and carpenters, and as such. And in the past, we've seen, you know, the education community basically try to push students towards that model university setting, and then, oh, this person's not going to make it, so let's send these people that don't have the education off to the trades or something like that, and they get there, and the trades, they're not successful there because they don't have that math background and some of the those sorts of things, trigonometry and right. and those sorts of things are very important in those fields. So I'm really excited to hear you say that we're recognizing that. I sort of have two pieces beyond that that I wanted to touch on, and on the essential skills part. I don't know if we really covered that totally, but that's sort of interesting. And just looking at that ahead of the schedule, there's a lot of talk around about the legislature requiring financial literacy or personal finance or something like that, and it seems to fit into essential skills perhaps. But how would the if the legislature were to make that a requirement for graduation, how would that fit in? I mean, are you looking at, you know, the and maybe we wouldn't do that without your recommendations, but how would that fit into your model as we're looking to the future of the requirements for graduation, for a diploma?
Chair Webb, Representative Holvey, I think our design of the diploma is exactly what you've said will fit into this diploma. Mathematics, just as a concept, is just a concept. And applied learning and taking your skills and applying it to something, I think, fits financial literacy. Interest rates, percentages, those types of things. That's what we're asking schools to do. When you take a chunk of time, like a semester or a class, and say you must teach this, you always run into the risk, again, of how fast do students go, what do they know. And I think our plan is all of this learning is going to be applied. All of this learning is based on the fact you can take what you've learned and use it. You can read a piece of literature, and you can write a paragraph or two to show that you understand something. You learn some mathematical concepts, and good teachers take those mathematical concepts and have you do actual life questions, such as, you're going to buy a house, and the interest rate is XYZ. And if you go into mathematics classes around the state right now, you will see that. But that's what we have the essential skills of. We are going to make sure they have civic and community engagement, global literacy, demonstrate apply mathematics in a variety of settings is the intent of that. And we did talk about, we talked to education committee members, and everybody a lot of people have what they just want to have. And we did talk, we gladly talk about that. But if you demand that it's a course, that means there's another course that isn't done. But we think it fits in this new diploma. I think it fits in this new diploma very well.
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, if I could take the first part of your comment or question and expand on a little bit. You're right. Historically, I remember back when I was in school, the impression was that you were on the college track, or you were kind of a second-class student, and you were in the vocational training program. Let me guarantee you and anyone listening that we have looked at the new standards and the test results and performance results of career technical education programs now. And those standards and the quality of the students exiting those programs are equal to or better than students that are moving into the university track program. So the standards are high, and students are really excelling in that. And so we're really trying to expand upon it. And along that same line, especially as it impacts the workforce, our community colleges have really taken the lead on creating the pathways, and you've heard a little bit about the pathways. But one of the things that I think is so unique about this is that most of these pathway programs are designed so that there's an entry point for the traditional high school student wanting to go in that route. There's an entry point for the adult who wants to come back into the workforce or wants to change a skill or need to skill up. Or the business that says, gee, that really fits my workers' needs. I want to get them in, so that we're not creating separate siloed approaches and different standards. The standards are the same. The standards are based upon what the industry needs in those areas, and so all levels are getting that kind of training. Because the reality is that the impact that our exiting 12th graders in any given year has on the workplace or on the workforce is pretty minuscule. The real impact of the Oregon economy is making sure that we provide the retraining and opportunities for our adult workforce. And so the relationship between making sure that our high school, new high school diploma meets those criteria and that those criteria are in fact the criteria that the industries, the adults in the industries will be also meeting has been an important alignment here in this system.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Thank you. Last session we had a bill, I believe it passed the whole legislature. I'm not really sure that was designed to engage the apprenticeship programs and the Department of Education in some pilot projects around some selected high schools in rural, I believe, and I can't remember if it was a rural and urban or anything. Are you familiar with that proposal and that where are we at with the status of implementing that?
Sure, Chair Witt, Representative Holby, there is a pilot that is being run out of Bureau of Labor and Industries that does have a very specific urban and rural high school that they're working with. That program is just really getting up and running because it takes time to establish it. But along that same line, we have a major effort going on in the Northwest Regional ESD, so that's Washington, Clatsop, Columbia, Tillamook counties, where we're trying to bring that concept to scale on a much larger scale by identifying what kind of sub-regions inside that region, what they see as their economic future, what their economic drivers are, and then making sure that we design training opportunities for both high school and community college students to get paid internships, have quality apprenticeship programs, et cetera, built in. So the effort right now is kind of twofold. One, looking at specific high schools, but then also looking at it from a regional perspective and how school districts and business community can partner together on these things.
Thank you.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if perhaps we kind of derailed your presentation a little bit. I don't know that we got to the learning, the personalized learning piece. And as I look at that, that is great stuff. And there's a school, high school in my district that's been doing that, a personal education plan, and it's powerful stuff. That said, as I look at this, certainly it's not defined here. So are those objective standards that are set by the district or the state?
Chair Witt, Representative Springer, the state will give an outline of what we mean by that. We will give this is what it looks like. Then the district will take that and put it in operational sense. And you talked about a district you know. The state, under the CAM, I'll use the CAM, which is done, is dead, this was part of the CAM. Some of this was part of the CAM. We will spell out, here's what we mean by that. Here's some examples of how you can get at that. But we are not into the method of saying you must do X, Y, Z. You just have to get at the objective of that. So the answer is we give some guidance, some guidelines, and then you turn it over. Because no matter what guidelines you do, no matter what rules you do, eventually goes to the district. We're saying very clearly, you can do some of these things with a senior project, can do a variety of stuff. For example, some schools have chosen that. And students choose different ways of getting at that. But we are giving guidance to them about what we mean by that. And then we get through, well, tell me, some district will say, tell me exactly what you want so I know what it is. And some district, don't tell me anything because I'll do whatever I want to do anyway, whatever. So you go back and forth there. But we are giving guidance to them regarding those standards.
Thank you.
If I may make a comment, a lot of times when we talk about the graduation requirements, we talk about the students that don't go to college. These personal plan and profile may be as important to those going to college as those not going to college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of students that learn very, very well, very, very quickly, but they don't process it. They don't know where they're going to use it. So I want you to say, this should help us by students making the right choice of colleges, what disciplines they might go into college, and not just, oh, now it's time to go to college, and go in as undecided major and those types of things. If you look at the dropout rate in your community college university, a lot of that is because it's unfocused learning. You don't know what you're going to do. So much of this has huge impact on the real bright student that gives them some direction and focus of why they're learning what they do. I wanted to make that point. Because a lot of times we get into, or just this is just for the other kids that weren't successful. You're not very successful if you don't have a plan where you want to go, how you want to do it, et cetera. Please.
My assumption is your answer is the same then as we look at the credit for proficiency. Again, is that, are those standards set by the state or the district? Or is it outlining the objective and the path to get there is left to the district?
Representative Witt, Representative Springer. The state has standards for every course, everything you learn. They're very, very good. However, they're very, very, it's not simple. So that is the guidance to the district if they want to give somebody credit for proficiency. The state does not plan to tell the district on everything of what's proficient or what isn't proficient. They have professionals in the field. They can judge that. But mm-hmm. they can go to the standards. If they want to give a proficiency for Algebra 2, they can easily go to the Algebra 2 standards and see what those are, and they can measure that. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's a variety of other things. If it's something like that, there's national tests. There's ACTs, SATs. There's all kinds of ways you can measure a proficiency that is outside vendors, but we're going to leave that up to the district. You can give the proficiency. It must meet. If you give the proficiency for X, here's the standards in the law. If they meet those, you can give them proficiency.
I just have to say I appreciate one of the points that jumped out at me on this page is the history here, over 300 community meetings. That had to be a big piece of work, and I appreciate that because I think that that's probably foundational to the success of this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for recognizing that, too, Representative Springer. It is exceedingly important. Jerry, you mentioned the exit exam process. Our committee met jointly with the Education Committee last week. We were given a report that suggested ways to the pedagogy of improvement or whatever, I don't know. But anyways, ways that we could move towards high performance in our educational system. They described an exit exam whereby a student would take that perhaps in his or her sophomore year. The competency level would be measured then, and then subsequent opportunities would exist through the 11th and 12th grade to be able to meet those standards. So it wasn't a snapshot in time. It was an ability to attain an education level, and also that could serve as a basis then for those students who presented academic excellence in that process to automatically enroll in our university system. So once again, there's a suggestion that the preparation in earlier grades, preparing for that exam, the ability then throughout the high school career to attain additional knowledge and then to transition seamlessly, presumably, into the college system. Where is Oregon in terms of that kind of approach?
Mm-hmm. Chair Witt, during the 2007 session, the legislature took action to direct the Department of Education to select one vendor to provide a 10th grade national test. One of the challenges, in fact, it's up this during this supplemental session, is there are actually two major vendors out there the ACT and the SAT, but both of those are focused on providing students and teachers with a 10th grade kind of mark where you are, and thus be able to put you on trajectory for graduation and post-secondary. The thought here is that we would like to even back that up further, because the goal is to actually help especially those what we would call first-generation students, those students who don't have a family background of looking at post-secondary. And when I say post-secondary, we're talking about apprenticeship programs and the whole spectrum, but that they don't see a beyond 12th grade future. And what these tests have been able to provide is a tool for us to talk to these students and say, wow, look how well you're doing on this. You know, if you took this class and this class, you could move to this level. And we've had many districts that have been kind of piloting this idea. Beaverton comes to mind. All their students take the test. And so that is really going to be helpful in us helping students move. The other component of this, and this goes back to the graduation requirements, is we are working with the post-secondary system to make sure that the new graduation requirements are recognized by the post-secondary system. The question earlier about SIM and CAM wasn't connected to the university system. We actually tried. There was SIM, CAM, and PASS, the word PASS, and we had a proficiency system. But here what we're looking at now is to say, community colleges, if you receive an Oregon high school graduate, a high school diploma, then based upon that diploma and the classes they took, you shouldn't have to do placement exams. It's real clear. They're at this level of math or writing, et cetera. University, if you look at this, you should be able to tell that this student, and then along with an entrance exam, whether they have the ability to meet your standard to enter, so that there's much more value now to the student, that they see a relationship with what's beyond. And then also, because of the essential skills, a relationship with, again, the workforce community to say, you have those essential skills that, in fact, you can come and apply this at your age into the workforce. So we're really trying to add a lot of value to both the students and then, of course, parents in the community that want to recognize that value.
You also discussed at some length the importance of applied learning. I happen to be one of the ones that benefits from that approach, and how we're trying to eliminate silos in our educational process. And I'm thinking back to the days run together here, but I think it was yesterday that Representative Holvey had made the point of the importance that our apprenticeship programs have in terms of learning and transitioning someone to high skills, high wage career paths. And I'm wondering along those lines what efforts are being made for school to work transitions in our public education system.
Chair Witt, we tried to capture in all the discussions regarding the Oregon diploma that when you graduate from high school, you got to be ready for next steps, which could be future education, could be the W word, work. And by having the conversations with students as they're going through the K-12 system about where do you want to go, what do you want to do, what avenues there are, we are opening up their eyes that there is more than just going to the university system, though we know that that does increase money, et cetera, et cetera, a lot of benefits. Also, there are a variety of workplace education going on in the state. I could take you to districts to show you where that's become an essential part of their curricula, where they're working with students on this area, this area, this area, and I believe it's getting to be more and more in the rubric in our schools that we aren't just doing this, we're trying to take everybody and get them someplace.
with that, you might have more specifics if you'd like.
Sure. Chair Witt, again, kind of to expand upon what I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're trying to make sure that we kind of reinvigorate the school-to-work system that we started to build 10 years ago. There are always challenges, in part because, you know, if you're only a 16 or 17-year-old, and can you safely be in some work areas and
right.
those kinds of issues. But that's why we're trying to kind of reorganize the thinking around it to make sure that younger students are being exposed to opportunities. We're talking about what the future could be for them. We're exposing them to the kind of learning and experiences that they need and transitioning them into then job shadows and then actual work experiences. So that effort is underway across the state. And again, some of the difficulty is some communities don't have enough businesses to provide every student with the kind of opportunity we would like, and so we're looking at simulations and other methods of giving students those opportunities.
And then one of the points I know that you talked about skills here, both of you in your presentation, and one of the findings in our committee's report from last session talks about the skills gap, and the report says that employers are concerned about the lack of work readiness skills because students lack skills required by today's industry standards. And I'm wondering how our school system goes about assessing what skills we need to teach towards. Do you involve employers in this process? Do you involve the labor movement in this process? Folks that are very much aware of the type of skills that particular industries and clusters demand. What kind of integration is do you have there?
Well, Chair Witt, in developing the standards, as Chair Berger has mentioned, in fact, we've had a variety of folks respond to those to make sure that we have captured or we are capturing all those connection points. And again, you have to remember that the K-12 system has not been designed to have a worker exit. Mm-hmm. And now we're trying to be real clear that what we're trying to do was turned off.
Glad it was you.
Yes. that we don't want.
Martha will take your
time. I know. I'll make it nicer. I'm sorry, that made me also lose my phone. the involvement of the standards. We're trying to break down the silos.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relationships that we're developing between, for instance, our community colleges and our high schools, that also include apprenticeship programs through the community colleges and our high schools, is really trying to expand this horizon and so that students have a variety of pathways that they can take. As an example, we have hundreds of dual credit programs in the state. Agreements between our community colleges and our high schools, our universities. One of the concerns that has been raised historically is, well, gosh, yeah, it was real nice that class, whether it be a career technical class or a college university level class, is offered in the high school. That's real nice, but, gee, it probably doesn't meet our standard. The study that was just completed by a subcommittee of the committee that Chair Berger chairs, looked at that quality, and in fact what we discovered was high school students that are taught these classes in high school that give them college credit year two, that is, let's say their senior year they took first class, their freshman year at a post-secondary institution they took the second class in the series, did as well if not better than the college level student who took their first year and then moved to their second year. So by blurring these lines and by providing opportunity where the student is ready to experience that level of instruction, we're starting to kind of no longer have that disconnect then between the K-12 system, post-secondary system, and the workforce system, and make that integrated so the student moves as they are ready to move and then can connect to the next level.
And do we have an avenue whereby the educational system is checking in with the industry leaders, business and labor, folks who are very familiar with the kinds of skills that are necessary and which are in demand for students? The employers community telling us that we're not turning out students with the kind of skills that are needed. Are we moving towards a system where we check in with industry leaders?
Chair Witt, yes. We have data. We know what skills are needed for almost every occupation. That data is being given to schools. They have the data. We try to encourage them to have advisory groups. And again, schools are local-based things. And I could go to one school, could show you, I'd give you a model program of industry leaders coming in, people on the floor coming in, talking to classes with relationships. It's there. It's the implementation that becomes, there's good schools, there's mediocre schools. Sure. You have the same system, you know, it varies, but the material's there. We have information that is easily available via the internet that a student can see what skills are needed to go into a certain occupation. We've never had the ability. I used to be a high school guidance counselor a long, long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And you used to have boxes of things that you'd go through and try to get it. And now you can go to the internet and say, XYZ, it'll show you what's needed, what classes you need to know, these are things you need to know, and any high school kid had access to a computer and guidance counselor or his instructor can have that. I wanted to make that comment. It goes back to Representative Huffman's comment. Schools now at the computer have access to ways for students to learn, and that's the other thing we're pushing schools on. Maybe you only have four students that want to take calculus in your small high school. You can join them together with four other high schools, and you can have calculus taught now with a good instructor that never could do before. You can never do it before. And we're trying to get schools to open that up a little of, well, how can new technology help you learn? Because you just don't have to teach students by having 20 of them in one class or 25 in one class. That's the power, and that's why the proficiency is becoming more and more important, because students can do it on their students and parents can do it on their own if they want to, about learning. So when you go down to science instructors, you might do a science class or a math class online for students. And that's not just a small school. That could be the large school that had three or four people that really wanted to go. You know, it's powerful stuff. There's new learning technology that we never had when we were going to school that's available.
Thank you very much. Representative Holby, followed by Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to step back just for a second just to follow up with Chair Witt's comments. And just, you know, ladies, and this is maybe more of a, I guess, a point for all of us to think about, but specifically maybe the governor's office and the legislature. You know, when we're talking about, and I have great faith in our educational system of being able to respond and basically provide the education and the training to head people towards different career paths. And I think this is, you know, a huge step in the right direction. But it occurs to me, and I've just seen this, you know, through my own life, I guess, and in the workplace, that and we've had some great conversations in this committee, this special session, with some information presented to us with the numbers, the demographics, the needs of the industry for more workers and the replacement of workers and the attrition that's happening. and it seems to me we've really got a big struggle on our hands trying to fill the future needs of our workforce and making sure they're trained. One of my great concerns has always been that not that we can't physically train those people and get them ready, but we lose them after that training happens because there's not enough job opportunities. And you sort of alluded to it a little bit. Well, in the rural area there might not be enough businesses, spots for interns or something. And, we try to address this in many different ways and, through ratios for apprentices to journeymen, things like that. But that particular model recognizes that we have to continually invest in training that workforce on the job as well. They have to have job opportunities to keep them engaged in what you've trained them for. And how do we engage the industry and the business throughout this state to incent, I guess, I hesitate to say that. I don't know, those words are not coming out of my mouth very easily. Incent businesses to provide job opportunities and more spaces for those individuals that we just invested in educating and training to make sure that they stay engaged in Oregon in our workforce so they're available to us. Instead of, training 100 of them, because we can see the demographics coming at us and the opportunities that should be there in the future, but right now we can't place them. Because, a business is looking at their quarter's profits, and to take on another intern is a little bit costly, perhaps. And so, frankly, we only have room for one when, in fact, our state's going to need four or five in the future. And there's got to be a conversation about that at some point, and a conversation about how we make sure we have job opportunities in the future to meet the future demands we're looking at. If you just look at the numbers, it just it's a missing piece, I think.
Chairwoman, Representative Holby, you really hit the nail on the head. You just need to look at the
state. I am a carpenter.
I thought it was appropriate. We just need to look at the state of Kentucky, who has really done a marvelous job of enhancing their education system and the education attainment of their students, and they leave the state because the jobs aren't there. So a couple of things that we're doing here in Oregon specifically is working with our economic development department, and you'll be hearing more about this as time goes on, is really focus on making sure that the programs being offered both at the high school and the community college system are connected to the economic development plan for the regions in the state of Oregon, so that, in fact, if your child gets trained, there's a job there to stay in the community, and so that we have that connection. The discussion around incentives for the business community, really that needs to be a discussion when we take up, whether it be tax credits or something of that nature, to be able to calculate is the benefit to the state of Oregon greater than or equal to the credit we're giving to the business in order to make that investment. As you point out, it is in the business's best interest to have highly skilled workforce. How can we as a state work with the business community to make sure that we're able to assist in that connection, especially as we look at Oregonians? Because as you heard during the presentations earlier in the week or last week, we have a lot of in-migration of highly skilled workers that we go out and we've been able to attract them to Oregon. What we would like to do is be able to provide the training opportunities and the jobs for Oregon residents, and if additional folks move into the state, they're welcome, and we'll hopefully our economy will be bustling so that they can have jobs also. But it is that connection. We are trying to make the connection with local regional plans so that we can focus on what is needed for Oregon businesses, but at the same time, we do need to have the conversation as to what the business community may feel that they need to help.
follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Just real briefly, I mean, one of the reasons I'm really concerned about this, and I wish Representative Barnhart was here, is that as we see this, economy of ours starting to slow down and things, and this really takes a huge investment, you know, to really gear up at the level that we really should be gearing up. And I'm really worried about what's going to happen coming to the going forward if we don't somehow come up with more revenue to put into this sort of approach. And because frankly, I'm not sure the businesses can handle it all. But certainly, I think there's a part that they should play in this in providing the revenue we need to accomplish this. But I'm really worried about this as we look at for example, the County to Payments Act, and what kind of impact is that going to have on education if we lose, those federal dollars coming into the system as well at the same time, if we don't figure out how to address these revenue situations to continue our investment in this arena. I this is not just the Workforce and Economic Development Committee issue. This is, the Education Committee issue. This is a revenue issue of the governor's office. We have to be, figuring out where we're going to get these dollars. The impact of those county dollars going away are huge to the counties, but also affect education.
Yeah.
And we need to plan for that revenue shortfall somehow. And I for one think it's long overdue that we address that. So I don't know if you have any comments of where the governor's thinking about it on that.
Chairman, Representative Holby, the governor does have a task force that is studying how we can better coordinate with the counties to meet their needs and our needs as a state, assuming we are not successful at renewing those revenues from the federal government. And so we want to make sure that the discussion is complete, and that when we move forward with a plan, it really is going to address the various needs that the counties and the state have in relationship to that. So he doesn't have a plan in his hip pocket right at the moment. He's working with county leaders and city leaders to try and coordinate that effort.
Thank you. I just hope that he keeps in mind that we do need this investment in education and workforce at the same time, which is going to create a larger demand for revenue at the same time.
Education, healthcare, and energy are his top focus, and so it will remain that.
Thank you.
You make a very good point, too, Representative Holby. I think that sometimes we lose sight of the federal revenue that we have. It's I don't know how much of that $250 million on an annual basis goes to schools, but it certainly will be a very significant hit on our counties and our schools as well.
Chair, with the annual amount is about $30 million, so $60 million biennia, but it really is also the secondary nature of the programs that are impacted at the city and the county level. The social service, the safety net that surrounds our children and our families, that allow our children to come to school ready to learn and be able to have a good environment. So it's not just the $60 million that schools will lose, but it is that broader canvas that makes up our communities that support that system.
Before the hackles in the back of my neck raise any further, with regard to our federal revenue gap, I'm going to turn to Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. But I'm not going to let those hackles go down too far. I'd like to address that also. A couple of comments and then a question back to something that James had mentioned earlier. I believe that CAM is creating the culture with community colleges to fully integrate with communities. I've used the example before about Dr. Frank Tota at Columbia Gorge Community College, and a couple of weeks ago, I know he had lunch with Ken Patchett from Google,
and they're working closely together on curricula to meet the needs of Google and other high-tech entities that are moving into the area, hopefully moving into the area. Jury's still out on that. We hope to know in the next couple of weeks. But hopefully in Eugene and other places around the state, the business leaders in those communities, hopefully they've got that same dialogue going on with the Dr. Totas of the community college system and are being as proactive as, you know, like the Winsmith program that we talked about recently. And that's a proactive thing that we can point to with the community college system, where a curriculum was designed based around a need for a region. I would like to, switching gears to the back of the neck thing. I don't know if it's appropriate or not, but I would like at some point, I know Senator Metzger and I have both been out and about the state and the district talking about the potential of possibly checking into legalities and what rights the state has under due process to force the federal government to continue some sort of assistance through the federal forest payments. I said on the floor the other day I truly believe there was a deal struck, and that it's not as easy as I think the Fed would like to claim right now. It's not as easy just to back out of that deal and say, well, we're going to continue owning and controlling 60% of Grant County, but we're not going to pay you for being there. So I don't know if it's appropriate for this committee to maybe find out more and start pursuing that question of what legal authority do we have. But I would, you know, there's talk about it going on, but I don't know, you know, if the governor's task force is addressing the legal issue. I assume maybe they are, but I don't want to continue assuming that there's a group looking into every alternative that we may have. So,
Chair Witt, Representative Huffman, the governor, being a former Supreme Court justice and an attorney, has talked about this at great length and has directed that research be done on that issue and pursue what either being able to assert our position or figure out if it was somehow given up in some legislative action at the federal level, how you get that reestablished. And so I would be happy to talk with our general counsel and see if there would be some sort of update at some point that she might be able to share with you as to that process.
Wonderful.
And I'd certainly appreciate it as well. Representative Huffman, a deal's a deal. I don't care how old it is. When the federal government owns half of the forest lands in this state and we do not receive any property taxes from that forest land, the deal was that we were going to receive 25% of forest receipts. And then because of a whole series of mismanagement efforts on the federal government's part in the 80s and 90s, we ended up not cutting very much federal timber. And as a result, instead of our getting 25% of the receipts, the federal government said in lieu of that, they were going to provide us with annual support payments. I haven't seen the management. I haven't seen the 25%. I haven't seen the timber cut. And we sure as heck are not seeing the in lieu of payments. I would very much appreciate an answer to this.
Yeah, I would too. And in an attempt to assist on your blood pressure right now, I just have what I think would be a short question for James. if it's a good time to say,
please, it'll be a very good time.
We recently dealt with the 10th grade mandatory testing, and you alluded to that earlier. You had made a comment that, and maybe I misunderstood it, I was kind of curious, the very first education committee meeting that I attended, I said, you know, I would like to see ninth grade mandatory testing instead of 10th, because if our purpose is to allow students the time to react to the data from the test, I would like to see them have 3 full years to respond to that rather than 2. And there wasn't a whole lot of comment in that committee meeting that day other than 10th grade seems to be the norm nationally, and possibly 9th grade might be a little early to test knowledge based on college, career path, whatever. But then interestingly, as we were doing the final committee work to get the bill out to the floor, Representative Comp made the comment, and she had never made it before. She said, I personally would have liked to have seen this to be ninth grade testing and not 10th. And then if I heard you right, James, you had said earlier that maybe earlier testing or something along those lines. What are your feelings on that? And is there the ability within the Department of Education, or does it have to be done legislatively if we go 1 or 2 years on the 10th grade testing and, you know, it's perceived that maybe ninth grade might be better? Will there be the ability to do that, to make the change?
Chair, with Representative Huffman, let me try to answer that a couple different ways. First, you know, we're constantly dealing with this dilemma of what we would like here in the state of Oregon and then what the No Child Left Behind mandate puts on top. And so we're trying to make sure that we don't continue to exacerbate the amount of time that is spent on testing rather than teaching and learning. And so that is constantly a struggle we're facing. Along the two major vendors that I mentioned that are vying for the 10th grade exam, both have or are developing tests that could be provided earlier in the process that are aligned with their 10th grade test, just as our grade level of tests are aligned with our next level to make sure that students are on track to meet the standards that we have for Oregon. So the department is working very hard to make sure that that alignment is clear and that students can see that progression, so that hopefully we can sit down with the sixth grader and say, gee, here are your wonderful opportunities. You're on this, you know, trajectory, or here are the classes that you really maybe need to focus on during the next year in order to get you on the path that you've indicated you want to pursue or to move you towards our standards for Oregon. So it the 10th grade has kind of become the focal point because of national requirements and because of the way these national vendors have set up their process. If we can make sure that the pipeline prior to 10th grade is properly aligned, then the 10th grade test may be just as valuable as if we moved it back to 9th grade, because the system will be in place.
Chair Wood, Representative Huffman, I had the opportunity to sit in during the interim on some discussions regarding this test. Everything depends on how the district uses the test. Everything depends on how they discuss the results with the test, what they've done before and after. I've heard today, and one of the challenges, and I give the legislature a lot of credit for funding every student to get to take a look at whether this will be. And we've had districts already doing that, using different vendors. And I've said this publicly, I'll say it again, forcing it, one test. You got to know why you're going to give the test. Mm-hmm. You have to have a huge discussion, what the test, how it's going to be used, et cetera, for it to have meaning. And each vendor, and there is more than two people applying for this thing too, by the way.
Yeah, right.
I just want to clarify, it's just not the two big testers. There's, I think they're located in
Oregon. Portland Company, yes.
Portland Company doing it. So one of the challenges with this all the time has been, how's it going to be used? The districts that implemented one of the two major testings, and Washington County did it way above almost all their schools did it, had a plan. Here's how it was going to be used. How devastating could it be for a 10th grader when you show up at the fifth percentile? Who's going to deal with that, student or not? I mean, that's tough stuff. And a test only shows one thing. So the plan you have in using that, at the same time, the students, and this is a big benefit, the students never thought of going further. And all of a sudden they find out that, gee, I have skills, I learned something. That's really motivating. But I think when we look at tests and we look at how we're going to use them in the schools, we need a lot of discussion. What's it going to do? How's it going to be used? How do you deal with the outcomes of those tests? Because there's nothing more devastating than getting, you need backup. So it's going to be interesting. I testified it should be the test that you know that, and I know I just gave my testimony, but that plan that the district has is crucial on how the test is going to be used, interpreted, followed up. But at the same time, it's really great at any level when a student gets to be able to take a look at themselves and where they are, and then I may need to do something is also very, very important. So we're always struggling with those two things, giving information, and then how do you use the information positively. Any district that our goal in high school graduation requirements is everywhere along the line, the student and the parent should know where the child is and what they need to do to improve and where they may be behind or ahead. If we don't do that, it doesn't matter what we do at the 12th grade. So I think that's where we have to keep having the dialogue of, I'm here in the second grade. Okay, I don't have my reading yet, but I'm really good at math. Now, what we do sometimes, then all we do is work on math. Because we do things we are successful at, and we're going to have that push and tug. But there's some exciting things, and districts are really looking at some things. But that 10th grade test, and some people think it's not an exit exam. It's a point in time where you can take a look and compare yourself, and that can be that can really be helpful, but it has to be dealt with in such a way that it is helpful for the child, for the student. Otherwise, it can be, a lot of 10th graders can, I know Beaverton did it. They work with a lot of students on, this doesn't mean you can't do something. You have to have that discussion or it can be really not good either. I just wanted to add that on the testing thing. And I appreciated the opportunity to give, I always like to give my input.
Thank you very, very much. Further questions or comments?
I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, we've heard a lot of really great things here today. The elimination of silos, the importance of applied learning. As Representative Springer pointed out, the fact that you took it upon yourselves to go out and visit with 300 different communities. Critically, critically important testing for the purposes of improvement. All of these are critically important. We used to say that you can't have economic development without workforce development. I'm convinced there is a third leg to that stool, and that's education. And I think our stool's on steady footing here right now. And I would just urge, as a parting comment, that with every opportunity, and maybe even created opportunities, to continue to check in with industry leaders, so that we are absolutely certain that our education system is tracking to the greatest extent possible with the demands of industry. With that. Thank you so very, very much for your presentation. This was absolutely a great discussion. Enjoyed it thoroughly. Patrick, rundown on tomorrow?
My apologies, Mr. Chair and members, for not having the agenda posted already for tomorrow. We are still waiting to find out exactly who our presenters are going to be from Economic and Community Development Department. That should be out hopefully about 10 grams for today.
And we may have a brief presentation from the folks.
Yes, thank you for adding that. I did correspond with the folks at the USS Ranger Museum, and they are going to present tomorrow as well. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Okay. We have a
museum?
We have a former aircraft carrier, the USS Ranger, that's looking for a home. And has some potential for some significant economic development should we be able to locate it here in Oregon. With that, our committee stands adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you very much.